Welcome back to TYT. Anna Kasparian and Grace Baldridge.
Just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Ladies in black.
Yes, yes. We are going to talk about bed bugs later on in the hour, which, yes, it's a story. It is a story that I have prepared for the second hour of the show. We do have politics in the very beginning, though. But you don't want to miss the bed bug story. It's insane. All right. Politicat 66er. Fun says, dude, the Senate will pass it. I'm guessing you're talking about the repeal of Dodd-Frank. GOP majority, and they all want it replaced. Yeah, they're just going to repeal it. They're not even going to replace it. They just want to get rid of Dodd-Frank, which is, you know, regulatory measures to prevent another economic collapse like what we experienced in 2008. All right, let's also do some member shout outs because members are awesome. Charles Porter and Terrier Peterside. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your first name, but thank you so much for being members. You guys help keep us independent and we appreciate it. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Recently, House Republicans passed their version of what healthcare in the United States should be, what they would replace the Affordable Care Act with. Well, there is some disagreement between the House and the Senate in regard to what that replacement should be. However, as everyone is focusing on Comey's testimony, the Senate is currently working on their version of what that replacement would be. And I want to give you some details on what we know so far. Now, I want to be clear that they have not released this legislation yet, so we don't know all the specifics. And things are likely to change before they release their version. However, this is what we know so far. Now, the broad outline discussed among members points to a slower phase out of Obamacare's Medicaid expansion than the House bill entails, and a shifting of tax credits from younger people to older people. Unlike the House version, the Senate bill may not allow insurers to set higher prices for people with pre-existing conditions than for healthy people. So it seems as though the Senate version, as far as we know at the moment, is a middle ground between the Affordable Care Act and what the House wants. And part of the reason why is because there are some members of the GOP in the Senate that are not as right wing, I guess, when it comes to this issue. And it's not necessarily that they're not as right wing. They understand that their constituents will retaliate against them if they vote for the House version of the replacement.
I think that's exactly what it comes down to, Anna. Yeah. I think a lot of these people, what we're hearing about from the Huffington Post article, where we're sort of speculating on what we can expect, they understand that it is in their best interest if they want to get reelected to, they have to deal with Medicaid thoughtfully. It's not something that they can just sort of gut. So I've seen some stuff online where people are oddly sort of celebrating, like, oh, it's moderate Republicans, but I don't really think if that's exactly what's happening here. I think this is just people that are sort of trying to save their ass, make sure they get reelected. What I do think is interesting is apparently there is sort of a discussion going on right now from the Democrats on whether or not they should come to the table and negotiate, or whether they will. For now, Democrat leadership said they would stay away from any negotiations until Republicans dropped their insistence on a full repeal of Obamacare. So I think that that's sort of the debate that I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. I have some more details about what we know about the replacement so far, but I want to get into, you know, the topic that you brought up just for a little bit. So there are two possibilities that Democrats in the Senate are thinking about. Possibility number one is, okay, let's try to take advantage of the fact that there are some more moderate Republicans in the Senate. Let's see if we can get together with them and negotiate a version of the replacement that we're comfortable with. Okay, so that's option number one, which, if you have any interest in what I think, is a terrible option, and I really hope the Democrats do not do that. Option number two is that they stand firm and say, no, we are not replacing the Affordable Care Act. In fact, we want to build on it and expand it. And that will be a tougher sell, and that'll be a lot harder for them to do. But if they genuinely want to appeal to a more progressive base, then it's a bad idea to negotiate with Republican members, especially because Republicans, especially over the last, you know, few decades just refused to even negotiate with Democrats.
Well,
right?
It's one of those things where if they haven't come to the table before, they haven't been willing to negotiate.
Right.
A big criticism that a lot of people who would identify as Democrats, who those are where their political leanings are, where they get frustrated with the leadership, is that it always seems that the Democrats are willing to sort of adhere to the they're a little bit too strategic.
They're very willing to reach across the aisle, and it's
which
look,
is like on
it's, no, it's not good.
Okay.
So don't get me wrong. I'm all for working together. I hate how polarized things are. But things aren't polarized because Democrats aren't willing to negotiate. Democrats seem to always be willing to negotiate, whereas Republicans refuse to. Republicans stand firm and they always get what they want, right? And so if there was some indication that Republicans in the Senate wanted to work with Democrats and actually come up with a plan that would benefit the American people, then I'm in favor of that, but that is not what we've experienced during the Obama administration. That's certainly not what we're experiencing now during Trump's administration. And so I don't want them to negotiate.
Well,
right?
If it's any consolation, there's one senior Senate Democratic aide who said, quote, there's no appetite as long as they're working towards repeal. So there are, it looks like there are some people on the Democratic side that are going to hold fast because they know that you have to protect the healthcare. It's such a weird thing to have to say. You gotta protect healthcare, it's important to keep everyone covered, and there hasn't been a presentation, a plan that that is, you know, I would like to think I'm open-minded enough that if the Republicans did present a plan where I'm like, all right, let's try this out, but there isn't that there,
right.
And I don't think that we're going to see it from the Senate.
And I want to be clear with the audience, based on what we know so far, the Senate version of the replacement isn't as bad as the House's version, but it's still bad.
Yeah.
They're still going to screw you. But they're gonna screw you long and slow, okay? And hopefully it'll lessen the blow of, you know, pulling the rug out from under you. But it's not looking good so far. So another less problematic sticking point involves the Obamacare taxes, which the House bill would almost entirely eliminate. However, senators are exploring keeping some of those taxes in place, but that could be problematic for conservative members. So understand that there's a lot on the line with the Senate. Senate Republicans almost unanimously have to agree to this replacement plan. Only two senators can vote against it. And in that case, Mike Pence will come in and be the tiebreaker that essentially will pass it in the Senate. And so there are some Senate Republicans who are just on the border of all of this, okay? Senator Shelley Moore Capito from Virginia is one of them. Also, Dean Heller from Nevada is another senator who is, you know, unlikely to do away with the Medicaid component of the Affordable Care Act because it's popular among his constituents. So these are all things to keep in mind. But it is something that our lawmakers are currently focusing on while, you know, all this other stuff is going on. So it is important to talk about these stories. Now, faced with a Senate bill, the House would have several options. It could simply vote yes on the legislation, it could amend the bill and send it back to the Senate, or the two chambers could set up a conference committee and try to resolve their differences that way. So remember, whatever replacement is voted on in either chamber, the House and the Senate has to come to some sort of agreement, and it seems as though the House is a little more extreme on, you know, to the right, and the Senate is less so.
Yeah, and then another thing, you were talking about the two swing votes, which I think is important. If anyone's watching and you care about this, you can always write to your elected official. It's so easy to find a way to do that. They help you out with a script online. Just Google it. I promise you, it's easy to do. Goes on to say it's sort of up to Mitch McConnell to keep them in line, to rope them in. It's very sort of House of Cards-esque. You know that you have these two swing votes, and we know that Mitch McConnell is a bully. I hate to compare it to House of Cards, but that's sort of how I can see this play out. I can only imagine sort of behind the scenes how he doesn't want this to be an embarrassment.
You know?
I mean, healthcare, it's a lot on the line for the Republicans.
And they've already been embarrassed with their inability to
imagine a second time, you know?
I know, exactly. Keep in mind that lawmakers are less willing to vote in favor of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act because of what we experienced at those town halls and because Americans from every political ideology, both on the left and the right, stood strong and indicated that they believe in, you know, a healthcare system that covers them in an affordable way. Mm-hmm. And even though the Affordable Care Act is extremely flawed and we need to build on it and improve it, it doesn't make sense to repeal it and then replace it with a plan that would do away with healthcare coverage for tens of millions of Americans. And that's not according to me, that's according to the Congressional Budget Office. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are right now. And of course, we will update you guys as we find more on this story. All right, moving on. During the confirmation hearing for Russell Vogt, he is the nominee for deputy director of the Office of Management and Budget. Of course, Trump is the person who nominated him. Bernie Sanders came across an issue that he felt passionately enough about to question him on. And it had to do with previous statements that he had made in regard to Muslims. Now, Sanders took issue with a piece Vogt wrote in January of 2016 about a fight at Wheaton College. The Christian school had fired a political science professor for a Facebook post intended to express solidarity with Muslims. Vogt disagreed with Hawkins' post and defended the school in an article for the conservative website The Resurgent. So what exactly did he write in that piece that caught Bernie Sanders' attention and made him question this nominee? Well, he had written, "Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned." So he made this statement, and Bernie Sanders felt that it was questionable and discriminatory. And so what you're about to see is the exchange that they had during this Senate hearing. Take a look for yourselves and we will discuss after.
Their letter states, and I quote, "We write to express our deep concerns about the nomination of Russell Vogt to the position of Deputy Director of the White House Office of Management and Budget. Mr. Vogt has denigrated American Muslims and the Muslim faith. His writings demonstrate a clear hostility to religious pluralism and freedom that disqualify him for any appointment, including that of Deputy Director of the OMB." So, for the record. In the piece that I referred to that you wrote for a publication called Resurgent, you wrote, "Muslim, quote, Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology. They do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned." End of quote. Do you believe that that statement is Islamophobic?
Absolutely not, Senator. I'm a Christian, and I believe in a Christian set of principles based on my faith. That post, as I stated in the questionnaire to this committee, was to defend my alma mater, Wheaton College, a Christian school that has a statement of faith that includes the centrality of Jesus Christ for salvation. And
again, I apologize. Forgive me. We just don't have a lot of time. Do you believe that people in the Muslim religion stand condemned? Is that your view?
Again, Senator, I'm a Christian, and I wrote that piece.
Well, what does that say?
The statement of faith of Wheaton.
I understand that. I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world. In your judgment, do you think that people who are not Christians are going to be condemned?
Thank you for probing on that question. As a Christian, I believe that all individuals are made in the image of God and are worthy of dignity and respect regardless of their religious beliefs. I believe that as a Christian, that's how I should treat all individuals.
And do you think your statement that you put into that publication, "They do not know God because they've rejected Jesus Christ the Son and they stand condemned," do you think that's respectful of other religions?
Senator, I wrote a post based on being a Christian and attending a Christian school that has a statement of faith that speaks clearly with regard to the centrality of Jesus Christ in salvation.
I would simply say, Mr. Chairman, that this nominee is really not someone who is what this country is supposed to be about. I will vote no.
Wow. That was an incredible exchange. And it's interesting to see the different interpretations of that exchange, because on the right, you know, you have publications like the National Review calling out Bernie Sanders and essentially accusing him of discriminating against Christians, which that, I mean, that wasn't my interpretation. I saw that as him pointing out to someone who will be an part of our government, right, if he gets confirmed, openly and transparently saying, you know, that an entire group of people in the country will be condemned or are condemned, right? And so that kind of messaging doesn't look good, especially if you are part of our government. You're not supposed to endorse one religion over the other and whatever. So, and then Emma Green for The Atlantic shared her point of view. I want to share it with you guys just to play devil's advocate and give you all perspectives, and then we can kind of discuss that. She says, Sanders used the term Islamophobia. Let's go to graphic 8A. Sanders used the term Islamophobia to suggest that Vogt fears Muslims for who they are. But in his writing, Vogt was contesting something different. He disagrees with what Muslims believe and does not think their faith is satisfactory for salvation. Right or wrong, this is a conviction held by millions of Americans, and many Muslims might say the same thing about Christianity. So, you know, her piece sort of defended Vogt, and I thought that was a really interesting perspective. But if you want to simplify what she's saying, well, I mean, this is what his religion allows him to believe, and since a lot of other Americans also believe it, whatever. I mean, I guess it is what he believes. So why are you gonna, you know, criticize him for it? But there was a time in America where the majority of people believed that interracial marriage was wrong. There was a time in America when people thought gay marriage was wrong. There was a time in America where people thought that black individuals and white individuals should use separate water fountains and separate schools and all that. Like, it doesn't matter what the majority of Americans think when it comes to these types of issues. What matters is what is the right position on the issue, right? And so if you're openly hostile or openly hateful toward a certain group of people in the country because of their religion, because you don't believe in their religion, well, then that's a problem, right? And I think that's what Bernie Sanders was trying to point to.
Right, and I think that it's, Emma points out kind of an interesting way of looking at it. Different belief systems. And of course, people should be allowed to believe what they want. Religious freedom is what this country is founded on, what makes it great. What makes that different, though, where I disagree with Emma, is that he is not just a citizen believing what he wants. He's going to be, this was a hearing, a confirmation hearing for him to serve for Deputy Director of the Office of Management and Budget. I think it's important that at these hearings, you know, what Bernie Sanders was trying to do was not test his belief system. I don't think he would care if he was a Christian, went to church.
No.
He wants to know that he's going to stand up for all Americans, even those who, he said in his own words, stand condemned. What's frustrating about watching that tape, Anna, is that you hear it a lot, you see it a lot online. Well, you can't answer a damn question. And we're seeing so many of these hearings. I think I've watched more hearings this year than
your entire
they're
life.
They're everywhere. It's like the NBA finals of hearings this year.
And the more you watch them, the less you learn.
Because
they refuse to answer the question. He's not asking you what your religious beliefs are, right? He's asking you
Not on trial.
Right, exactly.
No one's saying that you can't believe what you want to believe.
That's right.
He's asking, do you stand by the sentence that Muslims do not simply have a deficient theology, they do not know God because they have rejected Jesus Christ, his son, and they stand condemned? Do you stand by that sentence? You can't answer yes or no. The American people deserve better. If he believes that, then dude, stand by this. You wrote this in January 2016. Are you that spineless that if you believe that, you know that there's a section of Christians that will have his back if you were to stand by that, but you're not even gonna come down on an answer? To me, as a Christian, I'm a Christian. My faith is so important to me. You ask me, Cenk has put me to the test with this before, because I know that it's kind of strange and wonky to have a gay Christian. It's sort of like a fun gimmick. I will stand by my beliefs. Now, I also stand by everyone else's right to believe what they want to believe, but this guy is such a poor representation of how I understand the love of God and how I understand that it's like to have the audacity to speak for God. I hate when people do that. Like, I know who's condemned and who's not. Fuck you. And I know that they're by gay Christian swearing. Like, I'm a whole mess of things. But
look, I there is a portion of the Bible that specifically talks about those who don't believe that Jesus is God and how they are condemned. And Muslims do not believe that Jesus is God, right? So, it is based on what the Bible says.
But I think that Bernie Sanders was very smart in bringing up Judaism as well.
Right.
This is a multi-faith country. Mm-hmm. There's a religious pluralism that we should be celebrating. I really can't wrap my mind around someone who wouldn't get on board with that. It makes this country great. It's the reason why my dad was a Navy chaplain. It's why he had to learn how to perform multiple different types of services on the ship, because anyone can serve and protect this country of any sort of faith. What country do you think this is? You know what? I feel like there's such a disconnect. There's such a religious disconnect, and I don't know. It's very frustrating. I'm pissed that he couldn't answer.
Right.
Make your point. You know.
Oh yeah. Never be afraid to make your point.
Never be afraid to make your point.
That was a good motto for the.
Love that. I was never on it though. It's before my time.
It was before your time.
It was before my time.
Oh, maybe we'll resurrect the show.
We'll bring it back.
We'll bring it back just for you. All right, guys. Share what you thought about that exchange using the hashtag TYTLive. I'm very curious to see what you guys thought. And then when we come back from the break, some more stories that I promised you, including this insane bedbug story. You don't want to miss it. You really don't want to miss it. Just come back. I'll see you in a bit. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. I love the TYT lives. I love our audience. Okay,
yeah.
So Mike tweets in and says, odd that today people say Bernie imposing unconstitutional religion litmus test when last week they were calling him godless atheist.
What?
That's true though.
What was last week?
I don't know if something specific happened, but yeah, they were calling him a godless atheist, even though he's Jewish, right?
I think so.
He's just not annoying about his religion. Like, he's not like forcing his religion down your throat, you know? Like, a lot of religious people in this country, but anyway.
Not anyone's business, I think. I don't know. I mean, I say that as like my dad's business is literally preaching. I don't know.
I don't know. I think the majority of Christian people in the country are actually like you, and they're like Jordan French, longtime viewer of the show. They're reasonable people who have faith, and they don't try to force anyone to believe what they believe. They don't try to have their religion dictate the lives of others. And they're good people, you know? They're fine, and I have no problem with them. I do have a problem with people who use their religion as an excuse to hate, or as a way of manipulating public policy that affects everyone, regardless of what they believe. And it's just, that's the stuff that really gets to
and
me.
And also, whatever religious text you is yours, you'll find a sentence in there that will support anything you want. You can find a sentence in there for anything, whether it's the Quran, the Bible, the Old Testament, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's not fair to just be like, well, it says this. I'm like, well, it also says this, this, and this. And you know, what about the whole keeping women in caves during their periods? It's a thing I don't know. I could go on for a while about my relationship with.
There's a lot of punitive stuff about women and their periods. I don't know if they realize this, like you kind of need that to happen to procreate, which is another thing that religious people seem in favor of.
Yeah,
right?
And also like sometimes I would kind of love a cave. Like if I could like deck out my own, if the government paid for like my own like period cave, I'd like deck it out with a TV. Like if we were really like a religious country and like we followed the text, like give me my period cave.
Period
like build
cave.
It for me, and you could hang out there with your girlfriends
when
all sync up slumbies every month.
No. Period cave would be awesome. Like there would be a special chocolate section.
No men allowed. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
except we'd probably kill each other.
That's true.
Right.
I went to an all-women's college for a year and it was a time.
Yeah.
Not for me.
All right. Brian Newton says, Senator Sanders is my boy. With exclamation marks. Don't let that bigot skate behind his Christian shield. Own your bigotry, coward.
That's kind of what I was saying.
Brian Newton coming in strong. I like it. All right. You ready?
We're so close to bed bugs, Anna.
We're so close. Yeah. All right. A class action lawsuit has been filed in Georgia in regard to high school students who were searched by police without a warrant. Now, this story actually broke back in April, and it was reported by Radley Balco at the Washington Post. And apparently, these cops from Worth County went to Worth County High School and alleged that some of the students might have been in possession of illicit drugs. And so as a result, they decided to search 900 students without a warrant. And of course, they came up with nothing. They found no drugs. Now, the story on its own is outrageous, but keep in mind, this was the second search in 1 month that essentially turned up nothing, right? And so now we're learning more about the methods that they used, and we're learning about it through this class action lawsuit that has been filed. Now, I want to be clear about something. These are allegations. They have not been confirmed, which is why a lawsuit is necessary. We'll figure out whether or not these actions were taken by these deputies. However, this is what the lawsuit alleges. Deputies touched and manipulated students' breasts and genitals. Deputies inserted fingers inside girls' bras and pulled up girls' bras, touching and partially exposing their bare breasts. Deputies touched girls' underwear and, or I'm sorry, touched girls' underwear by placing hands inside the waistbands of their pants or reaching up their dresses. Deputies touched girls' vaginal areas through their underwear. And finally, deputies cupped or groped boys' genitals and touch their buttocks through their pants. Now, what's interesting is that the cops allege that these searches are perfectly fine without a warrant as long as administrators are okay with it. But administrators are actually distancing themselves from the cops here and disagreeing with what was done. In fact, the superintendent has come out and is completely against it and said, in my 40 years of doing what I do, I've never come across a situation like this. I did not agree to it. And so everything will be hashed out in court. But it's a little questionable that they took the measures that they took, that they searched as many people as they searched. And also keep in mind that the deputies had a list of 13 suspected students. Only 3 of them were in school that day. So why would you search 900 students looking for drugs? And if these allegations are true, why would they have to be as invasive as they were, right? It's all very strange. Again, it'll be hashed out through this class action lawsuit.
Right, and also what doesn't really add up to me is the superintendent has come out vehemently against what happened, but we're talking about 900 students. That takes a lot of time. What did they think was happening? Do you know what I mean? It's one of those things where I believe that they are against this. I can't imagine this if this is true. What sort of an evil superintendent you would need to be to sign off and be like, no, I'm okay. This is absolutely the appropriate way to handle the situation. But we're talking about 900 students here. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. Someone must have known something and either not spoken up because perhaps they were intimidated by law enforcement, and that's a whole separate conversation that we can have. Or they just decided to not say anything. I don't know. There's something weird about this story. I think we're going to see it hashed out in the class action lawsuit. Now, of course, these are just allegations. Mm-hmm. But if there are enough students that these lawyers feel to file a class action, it means that they have some sort of evidence that they feel will really help their case. They feel like they can win this case, and they have enough testimony from a number of different students.
And maybe this is just my personal opinion, but if I had a child that was going to this school and I was notified by the school administration that there is reason to believe that some of these students, maybe even mine, is in possession of illicit drugs, okay? Here's what I would do. I would not agree to having my child searched by the authorities. I would want to have a conversation with my kid and figure it out for myself, right? Mm-hmm. This is insanely invasive. And also keep in mind, these are, they're high school students, so they're older, but still treating them like they're criminals. And we've talked about this in great length on the show. Treating them like criminals turns into a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? And it's super dangerous. I think that it, continues to reinforce this police state. And I don't know, maybe it's just getting them ready for the real world, because we're all being spied on and we're all being violated day in and day out, especially if we're traveling and using airports to do so. But this is unacceptable. And I would be outraged if I found out that my daughter or son was being searched in this way in order to find drugs, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just the, I mean, the reason that they did it, if they had actual evidence that there would be, and again, they didn't find anything. The reason isn't even good enough for me. Just to find drugs, really? You're gonna violate all these kids to find drugs?
Yeah, and this also violates sort of a basic principle that I know my mom, who was a teacher, always followed, was this assumption of trust. And I'm going to assume that you are telling me the truth until proven otherwise. And right. by them going in and really being so invasive to this number of students, it tells the students at the highest level of law enforcement, we don't trust you. And then they're thinking, I don't trust you either. Right. And so that sets a horrible tone moving forward for these students that had to go through this. You should always, I mean, trust them, students, your kid or whatever, until proven otherwise. Trust that they are good. People, I think, are good. They have a good disposition. And this violates all of that, you know?
Right. And also, maybe the first time you did this mass surveillance of these kids or these mass searches and you didn't find anything, that should have told you something. But apparently, these cops have a lot of time on their hands that, you know, they have to look for drugs and search 900 students. By the way, the school is made up of 900 students, at least according to the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, moving on to some fun stuff. A police department has just released a PSA in regard to marijuana. Just because marijuana has been legalized in your state doesn't mean you get to be in possession of marijuana in a state that hasn't legalized it yet. So they put out this amazing PSA, and they included a mugshot of a guy who got arrested because he was in possession of pot. So there it is, and I love every part of it. Selkit Taylor, for those of you who are listening to us on the radio, is squinting, smiling, and sticking his tongue out in this mugshot. Seems like he might have enjoyed a doobie prior to being photographed. But as a public service announcement, it is illegal to possess recreational marijuana in New Hampshire, even if you only smoke it in Massachusetts. Cops had apparently pulled him over. I forget why they
pulled
him over.
He was using his cell phone.
Oh, he was using his phone while he was driving, which is illegal. You can't do that. Anyway, so they pulled him over for that reason, and then they noticed that he had a little bit of marijuana in his cup holder, and they arrested him as a result of that.
You know what I wonder about this? If there's any test out there, if it is more dangerous to drive a car, to operate a vehicle while you are on your cell phone, actively on your cell phone, than if you are a little bit high. Like, right. I wonder if there, obviously, there's really no way because since it's still a Schedule I drug federally, we really have not a lot of testing done on marijuana. But I think what they're trying to do is they're sending a message. This is for him. It sucks for him, for poor Taylor. He was charged with possession of a controlled drug, transporting a controlled drug in a motor vehicle, and use of an electronic mobile device. I understand the message they're trying to send. I think it is more really important to remember that as more states legalize marijuana, to be cognizant of how you are traveling with it. Don't be stupid. I heard a friend of mine transported marijuana in a peanut butter thing. They forgot that they had done it, and they could have absolutely like been arrested for it because while they were traveling,
Did they fly?
They flew.
They didn't forget that they did it. Let's just keep it 100.
Okay,
right?
But for the sake of this.
No, I know. Look, I'm just sorry to your friend. But we've all been
He's
there.
He's fine, but it's one of those, you know, that could have ruined his life.
Did they catch him?
No, they didn't.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
But don't be, that's what bothers me about this story.
No, you know who shouldn't be stupid? Our government shouldn't be stupid. Our federal government shouldn't be stupid.
But in the meanwhile.
It's so annoying that we still consider marijuana a Schedule I drug as if it's the most dangerous drug in the world, even though you can't overdose on it. And even though it's not anywhere near as dangerous as Schedule I drugs, and it does have medicinal value. So I just, look, he shouldn't have done it because sure, it's illegal in that state, yada, yada, whatever. But I think it's more frustrating that we continue with this prohibition of marijuana on a federal level, even though the evidence indicates that it is not something that should be illegal on a federal level. Like, if he had like a handle of vodka in his trunk or whatever, right? It'd be fine.
That is another crazy thing about it. So he's operating a cell phone, mm-hmm. and he could have had an entire handle of vodka next to him, as long as it's in a sealed container.
That's right, yep.
And that would have been totally fine.
Totally fine.
But a little bud in his cup holder, that's what puts him away. But Anna, here's where I think we differ a little bit. And you're just a more bold of a person than I am in a lot of senses.
Well, thank you.
So, no, I mean, that's absolutely a compliment. I am a timid and shy little girl.
No, you're not.
So, here's the thing. I think that there's the war on, the big picture is the war where we need to get marijuana legalized because that's something I agree with. I think it will help us economically. I also think that there is medicinal value. We need to get it for clinical trials and tests. There's so many benefits, and we can talk about that another time. But I think in the meantime, these little battles, you just got to be aware. Don't be dumb. That's what I'm saying.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, well, I am saying let him go, right? But if I were to advise him prior to him crossing state lines and transporting marijuana, I would tell him, don't do it. You might get caught. It's just a bad look. Mm-hmm. You just don't even risk it. However, I mean, the first two charges against him sound pretty heavy. And I don't know what kind of, you know, ramifications that'll have for his future. But come on, Selkett. I mean, let's take a little look at Selkett again, okay? Is this the kind of guy that you wanna go after? Make him a victim of our unjust justice system?
Yeah, he has a record now. He
seems like a really fun guy. I'm just kidding.
Does he?
Yeah. He's the kind of guy I'd want to go camping with.
Well, there, yeah, I get you on that. But he definitely seems like the sort of person that would want you to know how high he is.
Yeah.
You know, there's some people where it's like, I'm so high. I'm like, all right, we got it, Selkett. We got it. We saw you walk into the door. So we know that you're high, Selkett.
Anyway, well, best wishes to Selkett. I hope you can hire a good attorney.
Get off your cell phone while you're driving.
Yeah, I'm more offended by that.
It's really dangerous.
Yeah, and by the way, there's no indication other than his mugshot that he was high while he was driving. All right, moving on. An angry man in Maine decided to retaliate against City Hall by releasing a cup of bed bugs in the building. This is the most creepy story that I think I've covered in a very long time, especially because I have PTSD in regard to bed bugs. But this happened at the Augusta City Center in Maine, and the man is unidentified. We don't know his name, but that's irrelevant. The backstory to this is that he was living in an apartment that was infested with bed bugs. He had asked his landlord to do something about it, but the landlord, according to him, refused. So as a result, he went to the city center or city hall and let them know, hey, this is what's happening. My landlord needs to do something about it. City Hall did get involved, to their credit, right? But by the time they got involved, he had moved out and moved into a different apartment. This is where things start to get shady. He moves into a new place. The old landlord agrees to deal with the infestation, which, by the way, he or she should have handled it from the get-go, because bed bugs are insanely smart and they spread insanely quickly. So it could go from one unit to every unit in the building and it'll destroy your life. But this guy now moves into a new unit, and City Hall contacts his new landlord and lets that landlord know, hey, he might end up, you know, spreading the bed bugs to this new apartment. Just be aware, right? And so when that happened, the landlord kicked him out and he was not pleased. So he goes to City Hall and he's like, I'm gonna be homeless. Can you guys please help me out? I can't afford a new place. And so they looked into possibly providing him some public assistance so he could, you know, find a new place to live. And then they found out that he doesn't qualify. At that point, he goes to City Hall, goes back to City Hall with a cup. He had a cup full of bed bugs, and he released it onto someone's desk. Now, if you have PTSD in regard to bed bugs, don't look at this next picture. But if you don't, here's what the scene looked like.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Okay. So that is insane. And so at that point, they had to shut down City Hall for a couple days to make sure that the building wouldn't be infested with bed bugs. And then they reopened it. Now, as far as we know, no criminal charges have been filed against the man who retaliated in a very unique way. But this story is just insane to me, because You guys don't understand. Bed bugs, first of all, right now, they have evolved to a point where they're resistant to most insecticides. So it's hard, they're very hard to get rid of. And then they're very easy to get. So I've personally talked about this on the post game for our members. And one time I went on a business trip in New York, and I didn't realize that the hotel that they had rented for me, it wasn't TYT, it was another media organization, was infested with bed bugs. And I made the grave mistake of putting my luggage down on the floor, which you should not do. Do not put your luggage down on the floor or any type of fabric. You should put it like on a hard surface like a desk or whatever, just to be safe. And apparently they crawled onto my luggage, followed me home. And a couple weeks later, Christian woke up with a bunch of bites. And I was like, what is that? He went to the dermatologist. Dermatologist tells him those are bed bugs. I laugh because I have OCD, like I clean nonstop. And I was like, there's no way we have bed bugs. Goes to a second dermatologist, finds out the same thing.
You right? didn't have any bites?
So the reason why, I've done a lot of research on this. The reason why people will get like the itchy red bumps is because bed bugs, when they first bite you, they inject you with an anesthetic. So you don't feel them as they're feeding on you for up to 10 minutes, right? So you don't swat them away. And some people are allergic to that anesthetic, others are not. So I'm guessing that Christian was allergic, which is why he had those red bumps and I didn't. But either way, it was the worst nightmare. It was one of the worst things I've ever experienced in my life. And I am not a punitive person, but if I was part of this situation, I would want criminal charges against him because it's terrible. It really is.
I think you also forgot to mention one of my favorite parts of the story, which is as he released the bed bugs, he said, quote, they're your problem now.
Oh, and they are a problem.
Right. I mean, it's almost like a line from a movie, just they're your problem now, and then they disperse.
How did he collect a cup full of bed bugs? And by the way, the city officials were right in notifying the landlord, right? The new landlord, because apparently he had access to a cup of bed bugs.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never experienced bed bugs.
It's the worst thing in the world.
I'm gathering because I am truly, I'm not totally nauseous. I'm getting there though. I'm like,
It's so bad.
I didn't know what they looked like before this story. They were in your house, Anna?
Yeah. And by the way, so the way that you deal with it is you can, of course, bring in someone to fumigate the place.
Pest control guy.
Pest control, yeah. You can totally do that, which by the way is very expensive. It's in LA, it runs about $500 each time they come.
Is that the thing they have to put the tent over your house?
I think they do that for termites.
Oh.
Yeah. But so it's $500 each time they come, and usually they have to come multiple times. But it doesn't stop there. What I did is I just got rid of my bed and mattress completely. I was like, you're gone, right? I don't even want to look at you again.
And
you have to wash with hot water every piece of fabric in your place and just ensure that you didn't leave any like eggs
so like
behind.
Couch covers and all
everything.
That stuff?
Everything was cleaned, everything was washed, everything was fumigated and bombed. Like it was just, it was hard. It was one of the hardest things that I've gone through. And it's not just getting rid of them. It's also like the phantom.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. That's what I'm thinking of is like I have dealt with some mice and rodent stuff in my day, and I am always terrified of like a possum under my bed or a mouse or a rat underneath my bed just scurrying out and like getting a little like cat like on me. And even though I know that's not gonna happen and I dealt with it, I just think of them being like and then just like going for it. Just a great impression, by the way, of a possum.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Thank you.
I think I would be more comfortable with a possum in my place.
Yeah, because they can be tame. My friend had a possum.
Yeah.
It was found.
What?
Maybe that's a post-game story, but my friend actually owned like a tame possum. I'm saying friend, she worked at my gym, but I was friendly with her. I would consider, I mean, we haven't spoken in years now that I'm looking back, but I wish her well, and the possum.
All right, okay. So that happened. all right. So look, I feel bad for everyone involved in this story. I feel bad for the guy who, you know, lost his new place. I feel bad for the city hall workers who are victimized by these bed bugs. Hopefully everyone's okay and there will be a solution to this incident. But don't, this is like insect warfare. Like don't do it. It's just such a terrible way of retaliating against anyone. How do you have
Lord of the Flies?
How do you have a cup full of them? How traumatizing. Anyway, all right, guys, that does it for our show. We are running out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and read a few TYT lives before we end. Chris Duran says, did these North Carolina cops contact the TSA to conduct that drug search? By the way, it wasn't North Carolina, it was Georgia. I hope I was clear about that.
I thought you said Georgia.
I said Georgia, yeah. So for once, North Carolina is not in the wrong in regard to something. It's Georgia in this case. And it's local authority, so I don't want to place all the blame on an entire state. Derek Martin says, why the hell was your weed in your cup holder? Come on, it's a shit law, but keep it in your trunk like a smart stoner. I agree. Yeah, keep it in a better place, right? Yeah. Hide it as much, maybe in a bottle of peanut butter, and you'll be fine. All right, guys. Grace will be joining me for the postgame show, so if you're a member, stick around and you can catch it live. For everyone else, you can become a member by going to tytnetwork.com/join. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you, Grace, and we will see you tomorrow.